Black Rifle Coffee Company, together with the Boot Campaign, are on a mission to raise $1 million to change the lives of veterans. Now through the end of the year, when you grab a can of ready-to-drink coffee, you can help contribute to making this massive donation possible. The Boot Campaign is one of the most renowned veteran-focused nonprofits in the country, working tirelessly to provide life-changing aid and benefits to service members and their families. Black Rifle ready-to-drink coffee is available in several great-tasting flavors at blackriflecoffee.com/Dana or at convenience stores nationwide. Whether it's the berry mocha, vanilla bomb, or espresso salted caramel, every can helps. Fuel your caffeine fix while making a huge difference in the lives of veterans and their families. Black Rifle Coffee Company is committed to serving the veteran community, and with your help, we can all continue to make a difference. Let's raise a can together and keep fueling Americans for a good cause. Visit blackriflecoffee.com/Dana. That's blackriflecoffee.com/Dana.
And yet with all those problems, he has a real serious fixation on the state of Florida. I mean, I think it's just bizarre that he does that. But what I would tell him is, you know what? Stop pussyfooting around. Are you going to?
He said foot.
Are you going to throw your hat in the ring and challenge Joe? Are you going to get in and do it? Or are you just going to sit on the sidelines and chirp? So why don't you throw your hat in the ring? And then we'll go ahead and talk about what's happening. So,
oh, I totally stole Kane's line on break. It's totally what he said on break. Welcome to the show. Well, it's a fight. It's a SCOTUS battle. It's a primary fight. Welcome to the program. Dana Lash here with you. Top of our first hour. Top of the Thursday to ya. Sounded actually convincing there almost. So that was Florida Governor Ron DeSantis putting the challenge out to California Governor Gavin Newsom. And I have to tell you, I think it's weird. No, not the challenge. I think it's weird that Gavin Newsom is still as present in this race as he is, because he's already said, okay, well, Biden's running and he got behind Biden, right? So why is he out there still acting like he's running? You know why? Because Gavin Newsom doesn't think that Joe Biden can go the distance. He's not going for speed. He's all alone. Anyway, I don't know what happened. It's one of those days, man. It's totally one of those days. But isn't it kind of weird that Gavin Newsom's hanging around like that? Isn't it? You know it is. It's weird. Because he's still out there talking like he is going to be maybe perhaps the Democrat nominee. I think that there are legitimate worries amongst Democrats that Joe Biden can't do it. And I think they're keeping Gavin Newsom out. I think there's two things. I think they think that Joe Biden can't do it, and they're keeping Newsom out there. And I think they're keeping Newsom out there in case DeSantis is the nominee. Which, by the way, can I just say what an interesting matchup that would be? Because you have California and Florida, the two avatars that represent the sorts of, you know, they're polar opposites in terms of policy, state, obviously ideology, party. That would be the ultimate, you know, that would be the ultimate battle. What was that? What was that show on MTV where it had the clay figures that fought? Deathmatch, celebrity deathmatch. Yeah. It would be like the ideological deathmatch. So that was we'll see. I don't know if Newsom's going to respond, but he's still, like, for instance, he sat down with Sean and was talking with Sean on Fox. Newsom was. Did anyone else think that was weird? Not that he was like doing the thing on Fox, but I was thinking about this last night further because why is he the guy doing that interview and taking all of the Canes? Just say it. Why do you think? Don't get over there and like type a big long answer in Slack.
As to why. I think he's running cover for Democrats just as a general rule. But he's also, if you notice on social media, he's been firing out a bunch of crap, like way more than he used to here recently. So
I think it's because he's their heir apparent.
I think it's by design.
I do too. He's kind of doing, in some ways, he's doing the fighting that ultimately, I guess, Biden can't do or won't do. But I still really do feel like they have him there because they think, I really do believe that they feel like he can't go the distance and they need to have them kind of like somebody on the sidelines. Gosh, that would be a horrible matchup. You can't have a Newsom Harris. You can't have two people from California. You also can't have that. All right. So a couple of other things, because we're going to get into Daniel Penny stuff, all of that. I keep seeing, I'm going to pull this up. So I keep seeing Miami's mayor is going to get in the race. So this came out last night. And Francis Suarez, he is the mayor of Miami. And he's like, I'm getting in the race. And he's apparently trying to triangulate. And he's entering the Republican presidential primary. Let me tell you something. There is no such thing as a Republican who votes against both Trump and DeSantis repeatedly. A Republican who voted for Hillary, a Republican who voted for Biden, and a Republican who voted for Andrew Gillum. You know, the guy who was found and photographed naked with his escort on a hotel floor. And he also wanted more restrictions in Florida. Yeah, he sounds like a real Republican. Never going to happen. Can we just get that out of the way? He's like, I'm going to be a unifier. Unify these restrictions. How about that? I'm like, this guy, what Republican is that? Well, that's not a Republican, right? But you know what? Gosh, the left is so specious. They're so shallow. They're like, well, wait a minute. His name is Suarez. It sounds Hispanic. Let's have him run as a middle of the road Republican. Don't tell everybody he voted repeatedly for all the stuff that we hated and voted against. He literally voted opposite the red wave in the last election in Florida. And so he wants to run as a Republican. He's as much of a Republican as the Republicans on The View. So no, can we just get Suarez out of the way right now? That's not going to happen. He's not going to happen. He's great in interviews. He's very good on media. He's horrible in policy. He is horrible as a he is such a bad Republican. He's actually a Democrat. So let's just get this out of the way. But do you want to know what the motivation is here? Kellyanne Conway had been saying that she wants Suarez as a VP, as Trump's VP. That's what this is about. It's strategy. That's what Conway has been saying. In fact, I think she's actually even said so publicly that would be like a good and interesting view. Wait, you would add that guy on, a guy who wanted more restrictions, a guy who was basically, a guy who voted is a reliable Democrat voter. He has voted Democrat in every election. That's going to be your VP. If she got her way, that's what she would suggest. That seems like you just want a diversity hire is what it sounds like. She just wants someone who's Hispanic and who's from Florida because they think that would be enough 2024 wise to counter DeSantis. This is what it's like. No, there are like so many other things. Who is advising you? Oh, stop. All right. So we've got other things to hit, including I want to touch on this Daniel Penny story. Daniel Penny, as you know, the Marine that was seen on video. Who was subduing Jordan Neely in a chokehold. This was last month. Yesterday, last night, the Manhattan Grand Jury Manhattan indicted him for this chokehold death of Neely in May. Now, the charges aren't available yet, but we do know that previously he was arrested for second-degree manslaughter. Now, he's on video with Neely in the chokehold for several minutes before Neely stopped moving. There were other passengers on the subway that were there too, and they were trying to hold his hands down, etc. Now, at the time, Neely had an active warrant out for felony assault. So what had happened was he had punched an elderly woman in the face and broke her nose. Jordan Neely did, broke her orbital bone. And then he had been court ordered to attend like this rehab, you know, slash mental health facility. And he was there for 2 to 3 days and he left. And so that was like part of the deal. So when he left, that's when the warrant was issued. So it was related to the elderly woman that he had punched. And so he had also been accused of trying to push a woman onto the train tracks just, you know, days earlier. So Penny acted after Neely had reportedly, according to witnesses, threatened to kill them and was growing increasingly hostile. I told you, I think this was like at the end of last month, that a witness came forward. She had called Penny a hero and said that she was glad that he had acted because Neely was threatening to kill other passengers. The witness said to the New York Post, quote, talking about Neely, he said, I don't care. I'll take a bullet. I'll go to jail because I'll kill people on the train. That's what she was saying of him. He said, quote, I would kill a blanker. I don't care. I'll take a bullet. I'll go to jail. And then she said that Penny initially did not engage with Neely. He just sort of, you know, he just stayed where he was. And then Neely got more and more aggressive, started getting closer to people, getting in their faces. And that's when Penny felt the urge to step in. And she had said, quote, this gentleman, Mr. Penny, did not stand up. He did not engage with talking about Neely. He did not say a word. It was all Neely that was threatening passengers if he did not get what he wanted. And so Penny's attorneys, he released this video statement a couple of days ago saying that that's why he, you know, he did something. It was because Neely was threatening other passengers and he was getting more aggressive and that his intention wasn't to kill him. Now, what gets me is that the media is using all of these photos as of Jordan Neely as this Michael Jackson impersonator. Do you know the last time he had done that was 10 years ago? The last time he was impersonating Michael Jackson was over a decade ago. Actually, it was 11 years. It was over a decade ago. And he had become so violent and unpredictable over the past decade that there was a subreddit. There was a thread on Reddit where people were literally, they had pictures of him. And interestingly enough, that's now some of the photos that the media is using when they're talking about Neely. They're like 10 years old. This thread goes back like years. And it's like other subway writers that are warning each other over the potential danger that Neely posed. Like some of the conversations were, you know, I remember when I first started taking the subway and he would dress up as Michael Jackson. He hasn't done that for years. He's just violent, you know, all this stuff. He has not gone as a Michael Jackson impersonator for a decade. Stop it. The media acts like he was doing a Michael Jackson impersonation and that it like somehow offended, you know, Penny. And that's when Penny acted. That's the way the media sets this up. But that's not at all what happened. They're not the one. They're not out there telling you it was over a decade. And he had grown. He was on drugs. He was on drugs. He was on drugs at the time this happened. And he had gotten so violent. He had 42 priors. He had been in and out of facilities. And his family, who wasn't there because there was no money in it for them, are apparently there now because they can wring some cash out of it. So I'm curious to see what the charges are in the indictment, because I think it's really going to hinge on whether or not they believe that Penny's use of rear naked choke was excessive. And I think that's a stupid term anyway, because excessive is always used as a description for use of force in defense, but it's never ever used to describe criminals' use of force committing their felonious activities. Fascinating. Now, remember, this is also the same city where lawyers had once argued that police had no obligation to protect another subway hero who had gotten injured after he subdued a murderer. And he was going on this killing spree, right? And one of the officers hid because he thought the killer was armed. So this is how you're going to get more vigilantism, right? I mean, it's impossible to see how this was anything other than self-defense. New York City encourages vigilantism. Alec Baldwin goes scot-free, but, you know, a Marine with no record. Seriously? We're going to talk more about this here as we roll towards the bottom of this first hour. And we're also going to get into some of the latest green. You know, Britain's firing up their coal plants because guess why? It's getting too hot for their solar panels. Because, you know, solar panels struggle to perform when it's super hot outside. Did you know that? Did you know? Huh? Do you know that?
It's supposed to be in the sun.
Yeah, it's in. Yeah. How's that working for you? Mm-hmm. Anyway, so we'll have all that. It's all super fun stuff today. Yeah, got all kinds of stuff. We're going to break all that down. We got 2024 Law and Order, culture battles. I have some exciting news for those of you who wish that you could be nearer to Hillsdale College. Now, you can be a part of Hillsdale, no matter where you are in the world. In addition to their free online courses, Hillsdale College has created something new, the Hillsdale College Podcast Network. It allows you to learn even more from Hillsdale anywhere at any time. And on the Hillsdale College Podcast Network, you'll hear podcasts that feature conversations with Hillsdale College faculty, staff, friends, alumni, as well as visiting speakers and authors discussing everything from philosophy to theology to history, economics, politics, and current events. Listen to hundreds of episodes on the network, from the Hillsdale Dialogues to the radio-free Hillsdale Hour to the Larry Arnn Show, all for free. Get informed and entertained at Dana4Hillsdale.com. That's Dana4Hillsdale.com, and learn more about their free online courses and the new Hillsdale College Podcast Network. That's Dana4Hillsdale.com. Hillsdale College, developing minds, changing hearts.
Is the Trump indictment a game of 3D chess by Democrats and the leftist media? With all of the attention on this trial, will any be left for real problems moving to 2024? How about the kitchen table issues that affect you and your family? Make sure you're paying attention. Check out the Watchdog on Wall Street podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
I'm watching an insane video of this kid doing the Rubik's Cube in 3 seconds, setting a new world record. That's crazy. Oh, my gosh. All right. So Carbondale. Woohoo! Carbondale, Illinois, Kane. From your neck of the woods, Southern Illinois man was arrested in Nevada. He's facing charges of theft in Williamson County because he stole a backhoe and then drove it to the airport to catch his flight. According to the Williamson County Sheriff's Office, Timothy Baggett of Carbondale was arrested in Elko County, Nevada on May 21st for the charges related to the possession of a stolen vehicle. He was later released. He's currently being held in Elko County Jail in a $40,000 bond. So, yeah, he even parked it. I love this sentence. Quote, a backhoe was parked in the airport parking lot, which was determined to be suspicious in nature. I bet it was. I am so shocked that somebody who looks like the guy we're about to show the simulcast viewers couldn't be trusted with human remains. A morgue manager at Harvard Medical School is among seven charged with stealing and selling human remains. Yeah, he was selling them for mortuaries at the Ivy League school and the University of Arkansas, say prosecutors. It's an underground network that robbed corpses, including the bodies of two stillborn infants, at Harvard Medical School's anatomical gifts program and an Arkansas mortuary and crematorium, according to U.S. Attorney Gerard Karam. He said in a statement yesterday, Cedric Lodge, 55, who's a creeper, allegedly stole the remains from the university morgue with the help of his equally creepy wife, Denise, and two associates, creepy Katrina McLean, 44, and creepy Joshua Taylor, 46, and creepy Matthew Lampe, age 52. One of the clients, Jeremy Pauly, bought and sold body parts with him, exchanging more than $100,000. Yeah, when you have your eyes literally tattooed and you look like you're trying to be like, I don't know, like I don't think you can be trusted with human remains. I'm just going to go out on a limb and say no. That's not going to happen. Let's see here. Milkshake Duck strikes again. The father of the Colombian kids that were rescued in the jungle after surviving for 40 days has surrounded himself with minders and refuses to address claims that he abused their mother as per her father. And he left the hospital with a very, very expensive tiger head necklace. He was wearing new Air Jordans, new jeans, new shirt. He had apparently gone to Bogota and was shopping for some clothes while his kids are in the hospital. And he's very eager to assert his rights over his children. That's fine. And if you're unsure about where the Milkshake Duck reference comes from, it comes from this June 12, 2016 tweet where someone joked, quote, the whole internet loves Milkshake Duck, a lovely duck that drinks milkshakes. 5 seconds later, we regret to inform you that the duck is racist. It's about the quick cancellation of someone who, like, really quickly gets viral fame. So, yeah. Coming up, the powerlifting, women's powerlifting specifically, is under attack because dudes want to lift with chicks. And then in Michigan, they voted for no pride flags on public polls, and like people are losing their minds. We'll share all of that and more. Stay with us. When you see judicial rot running rampant and American companies embracing insanity and wokery, you got to fight back, starting with the way that we spend our money. So for years, big mobile companies have dumped millions into leftist causes, and you know, we just kind of took it because another option didn't exist. Well, now one does. Patriot Mobile is America's only Christian conservative wireless provider, and they offer dependable nationwide coverage on all three major networks, so you get the best possible service in your area without the woke propaganda. And when you switch to Patriot Mobile, you support free speech and religious freedom, the sanctity of life, Second Amendment, and our military veterans and first responders. Their 100% U.S.-based customer service team makes switching easy. Visit patriotmobile.com/Dana or call them at 878-PATRIOT and get free activation today with offer code Dana. Ask about their coverage guarantee as well. patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT. patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT.
YouTube, Facebook, or DirecTV. If you're looking for the number one afternoon host in the country, you've found her. Download the podcast every day to catch up. The Dana Show.
There was a bit of a kerfuffle about how the White House displayed the Pride flag for Pride Month here alongside American flag. Senator Marshall has introduced legislation to say, look, we need to adhere to this flag code. Speaker McCarthy hung American flags out front here yesterday. What do you make of this, number one, and do you think that the White House went Did they err in any way, the way they displayed the pride flag, the way that the flag code is supposed to be displaying the American flag?
Extreme MAGA Republicans continue to engage in petty performance politics. They are not serious about addressing the issues that are of importance to the American people. I'm unfamiliar with this controversy, so to speak, that Republicans are spending their time putting into the public domain. But I am confident that what the American people want us to focus on is building an economy that works for the middle class and all those Americans who aspire to be part of the middle class.
So that's Akeem Jeffries, DNC, Democrat Party head. He was asked about, they were talking about the incorrect way that the White House hung the American flag when they had the Hunter Biden Coke and Hookers party for Pride on the South Lawn. It's what it is. It's ended up that way. So I'm just, you know, I think that was a legit question. He was like, I'm unfamiliar with the controversy. Flag code. What is unfamiliar about that? It's flag code. That's not how you hang the American flag. Good heavens, you don't hang someone else's makeshift fantasy cosplay emblem
and look
at the same level.
They could easily hang those up on the railing, yet they chose not to do it.
No, because you have someone who does it. You have these stupid influencers who are like running stuff there, and they have no idea what they're doing. Oh my gosh, it looks great. I love the symmetry. God, these people. Welcome back to the show. You can listen coast to coast. You can also stream the program, watch the simulcast on YouTube and Facebook as well. DirecTV Channel 347. Your lovable curmudgeon here with you. But that's the thing. I just don't understand, like, what? I don't understand. It just doesn't, you know, it doesn't make any sense. I don't understand the controversy. Well, that is the controversy. I mean, is it so hard to not, like, I don't know, get naked at the White House on the South Lawn? Is it that hard, though? Really? Is it hard to just be, like, a decent human?
Apparently.
I'm just wondering why this is so difficult for people. It's discrimination to expect me to be, like, a decent human in a civilized society. How dare you? You want me to be like other people. That's literally discrimination. Wait, what? That's what they argue. That's their argument. I mean, it's really easy to just be normal, not be showing off, you know, literally having to take your dress halfway down or ripping your shirt. I mean, it's really easy to not be trash on the South Lawn of the White House. Just, I guess for some, Kane, I identify as trash. What are you talking about? You're so mean. These people. So they're going after powerlifting. Did I tell you about this? Oh, boy. All right, so here we go. Independent Council on Women's Sports and USA Powerlifting, they released this thing. They're urging public support for women powerlifters in this Minnesota lawsuit. So there's a district court's ruling, and this was just a couple of days ago, where they said that the USA Powerlifting has to stop operating in Minnesota unless it allows male athletes to compete against women in powerlifting competitions. You know, like men who just want to identify as women, you know, just identify as stuff. What? Yeah, like dudes. Mm-hmm. You know what? Let's have like a baby having competition and let's see how well men do there. Right? Let's just go ahead and do that. Oh, wait. Your inverted Frankenbits aren't going to accommodate that? You all right over there?
I am.
You're just like brushing your beard furiously.
Every now and again, you walk a line. A line they have to pay attention to.
I'm talking about the dudes lifting stuff lifting.
It's news. It's totally news. I mean, I'm not just saying.
Like you get all like your arms like get all like twisted up and then you start pulling your beard.
I have physical tells.
Oh, yeah. I can always tell because he just furiously pets his beard like a squirrel with a nut. It's crazy. Just, yeah. No, you would be not. You'd be horrible at poker. You'd be too. You could. Oh, right there. See? See? You got to sit still. Work on your bearing, man. In the face of these power lifters that are wanting to go and lift with the ladies. So they said the Minnesota judge's radical erasure of an entire sport's a warning to other organizations. Well, it's true. How in the world is this, I mean, this is just, it's wild. They had that, because USA Powerlifting, they have super strict rules about, you know, no drugs, no nothing, you know, all of this stuff. And they had, because there have been similar, like, protests with this, like when they're in skateboarding, etc. But there have been a lot of men that have really kind of pushed women out in a number of these, and we're seeing an increase in it. It's more and more. But this judge has decided that, I don't know, I guess that, I guess they know more. They say it was a huge win. They said that the USA Powerlifting had illegally discriminated against a dude. This is how this is described. And he looks like a dude, right? The request was made back in 2018, J.C. Cooper. He wanted to compete in women's powerlifting. The powerlifting officials denied it. So that's when the judge said, oh, well, you discriminated against him because he wants to be a dude, and you have to sacrifice your success to go along with the fantasy of this guy believing that he's a chick. So do you see how that works? That's what equality is today. So trans activists believe that everyone else you have to give up your dreams, you have to give up everything else in order to accommodate their pretend. You also have to pretend. Maybe you're number one in powerlifting, but when you go against a dude and he outlifts you in the women's category because he has a distinct competitive advantage because he's a dude, then if you disagree with that, you're the bigot, not him, for disenfranchising you. That doesn't make any sense. He was told that originally that the organization's medical director that, you know, men are not allowed to compete because it's a static strength sport. Duh. Why does this have to be explained to anyone? This is wild to me. And that wasn't enough. So Cooper lawyered up, took it to court, and ended up winning. The only way that this is going to end is if women walk away. Women ought to walk away and just create their own new leagues from scratch at this point. See, that's what women did in the beginning. We're not harassing dudes. So we want to play basketball with you. We want to play football with you. We want to play baseball. We did our own things. We organized our own league. They sit here and talk, you know, trans activists talk a great game about, oh, we're empowered women too. We're just men. Yeah, well, apparently you're not empowered enough to create your own leagues the way women did. This is just sad. I don't know. I mean, we'll see what happens with it, but they released, they need women to support it, but it's not going to happen unless women walk away. There were a couple of competitions recently in which women did that, and it did actually have an impact. Now, in Detroit, they banned Alphabet, the pride flags. It's not just the pride flag anymore. It's just like the rainbow with the pink and the blue and the white and the black and the brown. It was in Hamtramck, whatever, Michigan, the Detroit area. They banned the Alphabet flags from any publicly owned flagpoles. They had a tense hours long meeting. They met about this for hours. About the flags for hours. Like, people have lives. They've been giving up an inordinate amount of their life to argue with people over a flag that people want to fly because of how they have sex. This is the flag that explains how I do it, and I need it to fly. So they had one woman, she was speaking at the public portion comment. She was like, why do you have to have a flag shown on government property to be represented? She goes, you're already represented. We already know who you are. Well, yeah. Now, here's what's interesting. It's an all-Muslim council. So this is where the wave of the culture war is crashing against Iraq up there. Because, you know, this is a predominantly Muslim area. And you have these activists that are screaming and they're doing all of their stuff. I just noticed that the all-Muslim council, they don't care. They don't seem to care how loud these activists scream. They don't care. Yeah. Businesses and residents, they're not prohibited from displaying whatever flag they want, but taxpayer property, you can't do that. Can you imagine if they wanted to fly like a Christian flag? What do you think the activists would do? So there's 27,000 people. It's Hamtramck. TRAMCK. I don't know. They said more than 40% of the residents were born in other countries. So it's, and they have the significant, the main demos like Yemeni or Bangladeshi descent. And so you have a lot of Muslims that live in this area. And so the mayor, Amer Ghalib, made the flag a campaign issue when the previous mayor, whose name was literally Karen, flew one on city property in 2021. And so a lot of the people that were in the area began complaining about it. They're like, why is this on, you know, why is this on our public property? And so Dawad Waleed, who is the director of the Michigan branch of Council on American Islamic Relations, CARE, I'm not a big fan of the CARE group, but he said their flag policy doesn't discriminate against anyone. If you would have told me that in 2023 that you were going to have people fall on the same square on this, I don't know if I'd believed you. Yeah. He said that some Muslims who oppose the alphabet flag are no different than conservative members of other religions with similar views. Waleed said, quote, flags carry symbolism. Those symbols carry social and political messages. And he's absolutely right. So this is not a big deal. Why does it have to be hours long? But they're not moving in there. Have you noticed, like with the school boards, just think about this for a minute. All of the protests over the books in the libraries, school boards, everything else, like has been happening in Virginia, even in Texas and elsewhere. It's been happening in Michigan, like to a really, I mean, with a lot of schools there. And there have been a lot of parents that have come out against this, but they're not giving it hardly any attention because they're mostly Muslims. Have you noticed this? If you think about how much you've heard about it, they have no idea how to deal with them. This is like back when, what was it, Prop 8 in California, the same-sex marriage issue. And it was the Black and Hispanic community that were more against it than anyone else. And the left didn't know what to do, so they blamed it on the Mormons. They had no clue what to do. They're like, oh, it's those damn Mormons. That's how they approached it. So they went after the Mormons, even though when they actually did all of the exit polling data and everything else, when they actually broke everything down by demo, the Mormons were a smaller percentage compared to the Black and Hispanic community that voted overwhelmingly against, you know, codifying that same-sex marriage in California. But they ignored them. They have no idea how to deal with it. Same thing with Michigan. The left has no idea how to deal with this. How are you going to go after the Muslims? How are you going to go after them in Michigan? Because they're on the same ground as, you know, the Democrats who are just agnostic out in Virginia or some of the Christian groups in Texas. I mean, how are you going to deal with it? They have no clue. It's funny. And then you got the other, like just the L's and G's that are coming out. And they're like, we don't want these other colors on the flag. Get it off. I feel like the left is having like a little civil war that no one's talking about. They all talk about the right, but let's look at what the left's doing. Interesting. All right, we have a lot more on the way, including Days of These United States. And we're also going to get into, like I said, we got some 2024, some more stuff that the House has been up to. Biden left. He was asked about a question about Burisma and the $1 million and all the tapes, remember, that we discussed? At least he was asked about it. First question, first time he was asked to his face about it, and he just laughed and turned and walked away. We got that for you as well.
Catch The Dana Show noon to 3 p.m. Eastern on DirecTV Channel 347.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of the United States.
We've mobilized the world's leading emitters to help poor countries deal with the impacts of climate change. They called it the G7, the Build Back Biden, Build Back Better, and we realized that got confusing. So now we don't call it that. What we call it is, here's the bottom line. Look, we're the ones that caused the problem. The United States. We cleared all our land. We did all the things to make things more easy for us to make money.
Oh, that hurts. Now, here's the thing. Fat. It's a Build Back Biden Better. No, I mean, rebuild me, because I'm... Oh, what the hell?
It's no joke.
Listen here now, you dog-faced pony soldier. I don't even know what that is. What is that? Welcome back to the show. That's Joe Biden. It's a president of the United States, by the way. Oh, where's it at? I had a really interesting story about... Because he said that he was excited to fly at the grassroots supporter to upcoming events. This was Twitchy had this. It's they're flying a grassroots supporter to meet them at an upcoming event. I bet he's excited. I mean, considering, you know, like what happened. He tweeted, Jill and I are, he didn't tweet this. Literally, he did not. Jill and I are excited to fly out one lucky grassroots supporter and a guest to meet us at an event.
Double the attendance.
Mm-hmm. And then he goes, if you chip in now, it could be you and your guest. So if you donate to these rich people, then they'll consider flying you out to meet them. Like, you don't even get a meal out of it. Do you get accommodation? Like, what is that? Oh, man, I hope it's that Rose Montoya person. That would actually be hysterical. That would be so funny. Yeah, I bet he is. His speech, though, that he was giving, this was this at the air, was it the, U, which, not that, no, this was at the fundraising dinner for League of, was it the environmental group, League of Conservation Voters? Is that what that was, where he was falling all over the place with it? And, oh, yeah, that's when he said that they'll construct a railroad system, we'll play this later, from the Pacific to the Indian Ocean. I mean, there are so many. Okay. If we have the time. Because there's like.
Well, we're going to win and we're going to help. We have plans to build a railroad from the Pacific all the way across the Indian Ocean. We have plans to build in Angola, one of the largest solar plants in the world. I can go on, but I'm not. I'm going off script. I'm going to get in trouble.
Yeah, you're going off script and it's just horrifying. So let's not. Remember when he was like, Africa's going to almost have a billion people. You know, they had that. They've had that for over a long time. Yeah, all in the same speech. There's some hits there. We have a whole other hour on the way, folks. You don't want to miss, because we've got Culture Wars 2024. What the House was doing. All kinds of stuff. Stick with us.
Today, if you're dying of COVID, and very few people compared to a few years ago are, it's principally because you're either unvaccinated or undervaccinated. If you're dying of COVID today, you didn't take precautions. If you listen to someone who said to you, you didn't have to take that precaution, it's not just your fault. It's the fault of that leader who doesn't give you the best information. If leaders choose not to take care of their people, that's on them.
Oh my gosh, what gaslighting. That's Xavier Becerra, who is the Health and Human Services dude. And he's like, if you die from COVID today, it's your fault if you didn't take the precaution. He actually said that. Save that for forever. Welcome back to the show. Your lovable curmudgeon here with you. Top of the second hour. Listen across the country. Stream the program. You can also watch the simulcast. YouTube, Facebook, Channel 347, DirecTV. So what about, you know, for those people who got the clot shot and then ended up having like some bad stuff to them? Because there were a lot of those. Pfizer smile.
1.5 million that we know of.
Yeah. It's quite a lot. There were a lot of, you know, totally healthy people that just coincidentally had major issues after it. Just saying, you know, and it was never actually something that they never tested for half of the stuff. They were rushing everything through. They should have never made it mandatory. That was the thing. They should have never demanded that it be mandatory, something that was entirely experimental and is still considered experimental. They should have only said you can get it if you want to, instead of trying to coerce, you know, giant swaths of the population into getting it. But for him to say that, that only makes sense if the vaccine, which it's not, if the injection, which is a therapeutic, really, if it prevented transmission, and it doesn't. So if that, who was sitting on stage with him? Who was the waste of meat sitting there on stage with him?
Right.
Like, why didn't that person go, but the CDC said repeatedly on camera that it doesn't prevent transmission. So how do you reconcile that statement with what the CDC said? Because his statement only makes sense if you actually believe that the injection prevents transmission, which it didn't. In fact, that was not even one of the things that they studied, right? Like, well, then what are you doing? So it's a virus. People have comorbidities. And it would be like, you know, with the flu or something else. I mean, the idea that, well, if you didn't take this experimental injection that actually doesn't stop the transmission of the coronavirus, then you didn't take the precautions. That's the dumbest thing I think I've ever heard. He is so unbelievably unqualified to be in this position. His position was a favor return, because Xavier Becerra knows nothing about Health and Human Services. He was the AG after Kamala Harris of California. That's like putting Kamala Harris in charge of Health and Human Services. Now, you could argue, but Dana, it's just a bureaucratic entity. As long as you understand bureaucracy, then you can. I disagree with that because this is Health and Human Services. This is a department that tasked itself with recommending mandatory response with regards to these injections. This is the entity that was on board with trying to persuade the CDC into overextending its authority and demanding that we pause rents. I mean, this is, so it's more than that. That had nothing to do with Health or Human Services. That is just such a dumb soundbite from this guy. I mean, just think of what about, you know what, honestly, you know, the people that are responsible for this, the people who are, if you want to say, well, it's your fault you didn't take precautions. What about the funding, the gain of function research that led to all of this and allowing, going all the way back to January 2018 and allowing, you know, our funds to help subsidize this? Remember, we talked about this yesterday. This came out. This is a great piece from the Independent or the UK Times. And they came out with the story that, you know, when the, I guess the process of getting to the gain of actual gain of function and achieving that, as they got close, that's when they had this delegation of these ambassadors who decided to make that visit to the Wuhan Institute of Virology back, and this was back in 2018. And the cover for it was, oh, this is just like a cooperative. They have, you know, this is, this institution is like the gold standard for safety as far as what they do. And they found out that they were some kind of like, what, level two? They only had the amount of safety and security in terms of preventing this stuff from getting out of the lab as a dental office. And the ambassadors, the delegates, the diplomats were so shocked at what they saw. They sent those secret cables back to our State Department, warning them, like, this is dangerous and something horrible is going to happen here. That was back in 2018, January of 2018. And all of that came out in a Washington Post story, like right at the beginning of the pandemic starting in lockdowns. So, you know, if Xavier Becerra was going to be correct on this, he could say, well, you know, we shouldn't have been funding this the entire time anyway. I mean, Anthony Fauci and NIAID, and then the other programs with whom they worked, they were the ones responsible for progressing it to that point. And then now here we are. It's just asinine to sit here and say that, well, you didn't take the injection that didn't prevent transmission. Therefore, you know, if you get sick, it's your fault. Or maybe it's the government's fault for, you know, paying for this and pushing this to happen and then allowing the Chinese to do it. Seriously? Hey, let's have a very dangerous gain of function. Let's have these surveys go on. And let's have the Chinese, one of our geopolitical foes, in charge of it. That sounds great. So great. Just asinine. Okay, I have more. Because in addition to this, I'm going to pull up to switch place. KJP was asked about whether or not, this is audio soundbite four, whether or not the White House, the administration would ever consider some sort of prohibition for the hormonal abuse, particularly for minors, like puberty blockers, things like that. She was asked this yesterday during the press avail. Listen.
Last week, the president said that state lawmakers who were enacting bans on gender transition surgeries or therapies for minors were, in his words, hysterical or prejudiced. I'm curious, will he withhold Medicare funds or restrict federal health care dollars in some way in response?
I don't have anything to add to that. I just, okay, go.
And then when the president made those remarks, he was standing next to the prime minister from the United Kingdom. And afterwards, the United Kingdom announced that they were going to be placing a ban on puberty blockers for minors in most cases. Will the president raise this human rights issue with his UK counterpart?
I didn't see those comments, so I can't respond to that directly. And I'm just not going to go beyond what the president said in that. In those comments.
It kind of sounds like they didn't prepare her.
Nope.
So I'll say this. I don't think that she's good, really, at what she does. I think she kind of stumbles around and she bumbles over words and that. But I will say also that I think that they don't prepare her. Because keep in mind, the press, the White House spokesperson there, they're not the ones doing the work and putting the binder together. Other people do that for them. Everything that they say is focus grouped by all the people who work with the president. They are told what to say. Literally every word. They prepare that binder. They put, because I know people who've worked in that capacity who've done that. They prepare the binder. They prepare everything. They organize it. Every single statement that the president has said from the time span of the last time the press met to the current time the press met. And they put it all together, all organized so that, and all easy to find so that they can reference that at any point, because there's so much information coming in. It's kind of hard to keep that, you know, that mental repository going. And I saw her kind of like going through. I just don't think that they prepare her well, because there are so many times, and I've seen so many other press, you know, press spokespeople go out there and I see them flip a couple things and they find it and they're able to address it, or they're able to say some words or give examples. That's because they were prepared very well to do so. They did not do that research. They were prepared by a good team that did it for them. I don't think that they have a good team doing this. It almost in some instances feels like it is her going out there and the preparation of the things that she says. It kind of comes off as being an afterthought for the administration, which shows you kind of how low on the ladder of priorities communicating with voters and communicating with Americans, you know, they consider that very, very low priority. Because there's so many times she goes out and she'll flip through that binder and she can't find what she's looking for or something. She's just not well prepared. And even then, I also don't think that she's necessarily as much like of a political animal as like, say, Jen Psaki. Like Jen Psaki at least was, I mean, she lives and breathes this stuff. And I think that she was also very involved. And I think she was also a little more aggressive and bossier. So maybe if she felt like she wasn't prepared enough, I could absolutely see her pushing back on that. But with her, with KJP, I don't. So I think it's a combination of, I think she's just a weak spokesperson, but I also think that they're really doing her a disservice and they're not preparing her well. Because honestly, you know, how well your spokesperson does in these instances, and not every, you know, every press secretary is different, but when it comes to the White House, you know, that's, I mean, they have to be able to trust the team that's giving them this information. It just doesn't seem like that's happening. I wanted to play this for you. Speaking of all of that, this was audio soundbite 5. This is a California lawmaker. So in California, they're doing something really scary. If you are, and this actually went through and passed, didn't it pass their state house? So this could actually turn into a thing, an actual law. They want to go after the parents if the parents don't, quote unquote, affirm their child's gender choice. Listen to this lawmaker, audio soundbite 5.
So this particular bill adds the very important factor that affirming a child's gender identity is in their best interest, which is what your question is about. Why does it actually say that in an affirmative way? And it really is because if you have a 7-year-old who's talking about having a potential to say, I being able to articulate that they believe that they are not the same gender as they are biologically, then it should be affirmed. And through care, it should be determined. And that's what we did with our own child. And that would give the ability for a parent who wasn't sure to affirm and get their child the care that they need to make that, so they can begin to articulate that determination. But by saying and rejecting it in wholesale, then you're essentially rejecting your child. And that is not in the best interest of a child. We should be affirming our children in every possible way and getting them whatever appropriate care they need, whether it's based on their gender, whether it's based on how their studies are in school. It doesn't matter. Our children should be affirmed. And this is saying that you have to include gender affirmation as a part of that.
Mm. That's unbelievable. Now, this bill, this California bill, made it through the state house, and now it goes to the state Senate, goes to their floor. And it's the TGI Youth Empowerment Act. So Assembly Bill 957, it goes to the Senate floor despite concerns that, you know, how is this going to be interpreted by the courts? How is this going to work? And they said that lawmakers in support of the measure, they remarked that gender affirmation would not be the ultimate requirement for judges to determine whether or not parents get custody. But, you know, yeah, sure. I'm really sure. This is what happens when you sit out the culture war. This. Remember what I told you? Politics is downstream from pop culture. Well, this is culture that became policy.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
You know, I put this in the headlines and I instantly regretted it. It's from New York Post. It's not a Florida story. No, it's a Texas story. Harris County Sheriff Ed Gonzalez came across it was a report of a deceased female. It was reported at a residence. And when they showed up,
so far so good.
They said, "Well, okay, it looks like a deceased female." But upon closer inspection, they determined it was a silicone doll for certain activities, wearing a pink brassiere and underwear at the time it was found.
Certain activities.
Oh, and it was dismembered.
Oh.
It was a dismembered silicone play doll. That's so gross. So there. Yeah. So that's an actual thing. It was in East Harris County, New York Post. We got through that. Okay, good. A Belgian dad on TikTok. I hate TikTok. Faked his own death to teach his family a lesson. He thought he was going to teach them a lesson about the importance of staying in touch. So he faked his own death. David Bertin, 45. He roped his wife and kids into the ruse. And then only half the family showed up. He showed up on a helicopter with a camera crew and then set about comforting his distraught loved ones. He goes, "I never get invited to anything. No one sees me. We all grew apart and I feel unappreciated." So he thought he would just bridge that gap by pretending to die. Faked his own death. Just what a freak. Stop it. Stop being weird. Reach out to people.
Between Twitter, Facebook, or any of your social media, there's a lot of information out there. That's why your lovable curmudgeon is here to help you make sense of it all, live or on demand. The Dana Show.
What do you make of this case and race's role in it?
Well, I think the case, even on its face, is very troubling, because are we now going to say that a private citizen, no law enforcement, no calls to law enforcement, can get up on a subway or anywhere else and put somebody in a chokehold and kill them because they perceived in their own mind something that no one else said that they saw, and that was a threat?
Well, that's not true at all. I love how he's just ignoring the witnesses there. Al Sharpton, the reverend, he is as much of a reverend as Hunter Biden is not a drug addict. Welcome back to the show. Your lovable curmudgeon here with you. So the Reverend Al Sharpton, he's like, "Well, no one else came out and said that." Well, that's not true, because witnesses were already speaking out. In fact, the New York Post was talking to some of them. One woman had said, one in particular, she did not want her name out. She said he was a hero. And she said Neely was walking around saying, "I don't care. I'll take a bullet. I'm going to go to jail." He said that he's going to kill the people on the train. He said, "I will kill you. I don't care. I'll take a bullet. I'll go to jail." And then he said, "I'll kill a mother unredacted too." So she said that Penny did not initially even engage until it got really bad. And the other thing too, contrary to what Al Sharpton, you know, the guy who made velour tracksuits popular before Paris Hilton with Juicy Couture. The other thing is that he was this dude, Jordan Neely, who had not done a Michael Jackson impersonation for over 10 years by this time. That's the other thing the media is not telling you. It's been over a decade since he was doing the Michael Jackson impersonations. So they're showing you literally 11-year-old photos in the media. It goes all the way back, I think, to like 2013, one of the subreddits. They were warning people. He was so known as a violent person that there was a thread on Reddit where regular subway passengers were warning each other about that stop, that platform, that guy. Oh, for years, with photos. And interestingly enough, some of the photos that they used that came out in that thread are some of the ones the media is using, talking about Jordan Neely in different stories. So for Al Sharpton to say that no one else said that, he's lying. I mean, but is that new for Al Sharpton? I mean, is that new for him? I mean, this was the guy who stoked a massacre at Freddy's Fashion Mart in Harlem. He was the guy who sparked an anti-Semitic riot. Got a guy killed. Remember that? Oh, yeah. The Freddy's Fashion Mart attack in December 1995. 8 people were killed when a gunman seized hostages at Freddy's Fashion Mart, set the building on fire. And that was because Al Sharpton was mad. Remember Al Sharpton, the guy who's now going off on Daniel Penny? It's because Al Sharpton was mad. He was mad over the Jewish tenant who operated Freddy's Fashion Mart because the tenant was going to evict the longtime sub-tenant. It was a record store, and it was called The Record Shack, and it was owned by a guy named Sekulu Senge. And so Sharpton led the protests outside the store for weeks and weeks and weeks. He led the protests outside of the store for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. And he told the crowd that had assembled outside of the store, quote, "We will not stand by and allow them to move this brother so some white interloper can expand his business," end quote. And it was about that time one of the activists who was involved in the protests outside of the store entered the little 38 and flammable liquid. He made all the customers leave. Then he set the store on fire and stood at the only exit. Police officers arrived and he shot at them to keep everybody out. He shot 4 customers when they were trying to leave the store. And 2 hours later, when firefighters were actually able to enter the store, that's when they found that there were 7 store employees who were from smoke inhalation, and the guy had killed himself. And then they found 3 of the victims in a back room, and then there was some more who were sealed away in the basement. Now, the only thing that Sharpton ever said that he felt regret for was using the phrase white interloper. That was it. And so now he's out there going off on Daniel Penny. That's not the only thing. I mean, let's not forget the Brawley case. Good heavens, where he's just outright accusing people of something they didn't do. So Al Sharpton incited the firebombing of a Jewish store in Harlem. Caused the deaths of 7 people. I don't include Roland James Smith, the murderer, in that. And it was a rent dispute. That was it. They were renovating the building, and they had every right to say, well, maybe we could bring in a tenant that could, you know, earn more price. Things are becoming more expensive. Everybody has that right. So now Al Sharpton's out there saying this stuff, this nonsense. A private citizen can just get up on a subway and put someone in a chokehold. Let's go ahead and ignore Jordan Neely's violent threats to the other passengers. And more than one have come forward. That's the only woman who actually talked to the New York Post. Let's ignore that. Let's ignore the fact that just a couple of days prior, Jordan Neely, according to witnesses, tried pushing a woman onto the tracks. Let's ignore how he already had an active warrant out for felony assault. He punched a 67-year-old woman right in her face, broke her nose, and her orbital bone. Let's ignore that. Let's ignore his 42 priors. Let's ignore the fact that he was so violent and unpredictable that Redditors had a 10-year-long thread on the guy. And let's ignore the fact that his autopsy came out, his autopsy report, toxicology, he was on drugs. Let's ignore all that. Oh, because the family, who has not been there this entire time, don't sit here and tell me about crazy people on drugs and families. I've had crazy people on drugs in my family. And I'm not even going to hear it from people. You don't have to have money either to get involved and to get engaged. They're on the street because people just don't. I mean, this guy was apparently on the street for over a decade this bad. Where was the family? He had been court ordered into a rehabilitation, a mental health facility. He left after 2 days. So that warrant was, and that was part of his punishment for punching that elderly woman. So he had been, he left 2 days after, and that kicked the warrant into effect. Let's ignore all of that. We're just going to act like Daniel Penny. We're just going to act like he just up and decided, well, there's a guy, I'm going to go kill him. They make it sound like he that they make it sound like Daniel Penny was mad because Jordan Neely was a Michael Jackson impersonator. And like I said, he hadn't done that in like 10 years. What gets me about this, and this is the disgustingness of somebody like Al Sharpton. What gets me is that they're rushing to present this picture of a man who is victimized by, you know, apparently everybody except his own family and himself. I mean, Al Sharpton proves that even the devil can quote scripture. I have to question the spiritual wisdom and health of people who sit here and promote this kind of bunk narrative. Oh, he just decided to ruin his life that day. I mean, they're going to sit here and assume this of Penny. Penny doesn't have a record. I mean, golly, the video shows him still thrashing about. Other passengers were trying to assist him. Here's another thing to keep in mind. Penny was trying to apparently contain Neely until law enforcement arrived. This is the restorative justice running rampant in New York. They go after people who want to protect themselves. This is the same city where lawyers argue that police had no obligation to protect a subway hero who subdued a killer and was injured because the cop hid because he thought that the killer was armed. I don't know if you're familiar with this story. I've written about it before. It had to do with this man named Joseph Lozito, a Long Island dad. He was stabbed 7 times trying to subdue this madman on the subway. And when he went to court, the city argued that police had no obligation to protect him. Let's not forget Joseph or Jose Alba. Jose Alba, remember the bodega owner, or Bogota, if you're Jill Biden. I mean, he's on video. A guy's trying to kill him on video. He defends himself, and Alvin Bragg still charges him. And it was only after massive amounts of outrage did they drop those charges. Hell, didn't they have him at Rikers? Didn't they put Alba in Rikers? You've got to be kidding me. Vigilantism isn't self-defense, but this was self-defense with Penny. But see, New York City encourages this. They encourage vigilantism because they refuse to keep violent career criminals off the streets. And so when someone's forced to defend themselves or others, then they go and punish those people. I'm really curious because we don't know the charges with the grand jury. We only know that Penny had been previously arrested for second degree manslaughter. I'm very curious as to whether or not the grand jury took the city's culpability into question when they were making this determination. Listen to this. This audio soundbite 9. Here's Al Sharpton, Freddy's Fashion Mart, velour tracksuit wearing, devil can quote scripture guy himself. Listen to this.
By the family's own admission, Neely had mental health issues that we need to deal with people in the streets, that because Neely was having a meltdown on the train. He was not threatening anyone. He was ready to die. He was ready to go to jail. So we've got to deal with the mental health issue.
That's not what witnesses say. You can't deal with the mental health issue when your whole health system is in a boondoggle anyway. I just had the headline yesterday about with Kathy Hochul, the $1.6 billion that taxpayers are going to be on the hook for because nobody can spend money, right? To say nothing of all the money that Bill de Blasio and his wife lost when they started that program to go after and try to remedy the mental health problem in New York City, and all that money just dissipated into the ether. Where did that go? Please. Where was Al Sharpton? Where were any of these people for this guy before this happened? Where were any of these people for the 42 priors? Where were any of these people after he punched that woman in the face? I didn't see Al Sharpton coming after that elderly woman that got hit in the face, but oh my gosh, he smells a dollar, and here he comes. He didn't come out for that woman. He didn't come out for the woman that he's accused of being pushed, trying to push on the tracks by witnesses days prior. They didn't come out for Penny himself. until they can use him as the cause célèbre. And then all of a sudden, there everybody is with their PR firms and their spokespeople and their minders and their new social media accounts and their new narratives and their new friends in the media so that they can sit here and launder this stupid narrative that impugns the character of a guy who had no record, who served his country admirably, and was called to defend himself and others because the people who run New York City don't do a damn thing for the taxpayers. Nothing. They don't protect them. They don't keep criminals off the streets. They force everyone to be at the prey of the restorative justice that indulges that criminality. Also, they can sit here and run on a record of look how good we are to people. Look how nice we are to the criminal at the expense of your livelihoods and security. And how in the hell do these people keep getting elected? I don't know. No, Daniel Penny defended himself. The end. Everyone out there going after him, they smell money. That's what this is all about. Own it. Shameful. We have a lot more on the way. We got Florida Man coming up. You don't want to miss as we move.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
So a Florida man allegedly threw a 7-inch knife after being denied a ride to GameStop, say deputies, Palm Coast. It was a 7-inch kitchen knife he threw at a person on Monday. He was denied a ride to the GameStop, Flagler County Sheriff's Office. James Colasanti, 19, asked somebody for a ride to GameStop. They said no. That's when he pulled out two knives and threatened to kill them. Well, I'm sure that's going to persuade them to give. Yeah, that'll do it. That'll do it. Yeah, hop in. Let's go. Let's go to GameStop. Someone took the knives away, but then he reportedly grabbed a 7-inch knife and threw it. And he jumped a fence at a nearby high school that sent the school into lockdown. They found him in a storage container on school property, and he was armed. Apparently, how many knives does this guy have? The sheriff goes, it doesn't get more pathetic than this. He wrecked his future over trying to get to GameStop over video games. Colasanti was charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, armed trespassing on school grounds. What in the world is wrong with us? What is wrong with this dude? What is wrong? They found him. There's like, they have the Flagler County Sheriff's Office body cam footage. It's weird. They found him in a storage container.
Probably going to GameStop for a copy of Fruit Ninja.
You think?
Probably.
Like, why? Like, what is wrong with you? I don't understand. This is, from Fox 35 Orlando. A Florida woman strikes an intruder with a hammer while her husband held him at gunpoint. See, now, there's a marriage right there, you know? Florida woman, her husband held this guy, a home invader, at gunpoint, and the Florida woman hit him with a hammer. Right. Marion County Sheriff's Office. This guy, this Robin Rivera, who was the home invader, he was trying to apparently get into his mother-in-law's house, but she didn't live there. And he was just like, oh man, his mugshot looks rough. He didn't care, apparently. He was 41 years old. He's still trying to get in. It happened like 11:30 p.m. on a Sunday. The couple were asleep. The wife heard a loud banging noise. It kept getting louder. And that was coming from Rivera, who was knocking so hard he knocked the door off the hinges. And that's when he made his way inside. The husband grabbed his shotgun and loaded it. Why did you have to load it? Like, that should be loaded, but I'm glad he had one. He told Rivera to get out or he would shoot him. Rivera said, go ahead and shoot me. The two men got into a tussle over the gun that caused the alleged intruder to fall down. See, right when he said, then go ahead and shoot me, I would have shot him. Then it's done. I'm not going to have a tussle with you. I'm going to say I'm armed. I might give you a chance unless you're still coming towards me, in which case. And then, so anyway, the wife grabbed the hammer and struck Rivera on the head. He went down, but he got up again, charged the couple again. So she hit him a few more times with the hammer just as deputies arrived at the scene. They noticed that the police noted their front door was totally removed from the wall. And there was all kinds of blood because Rivera had been beaten with a hammer. How do you get beaten with a hammer and then you still understand your Miranda rights? He said he was trying to get back into his mother-in-law's house, and then he was told, this is not your mother-in-law's house. And they're like, you're not at your mom-in-law's house. And he's like, I'm not? Oh, my gosh. So he's being held in jail on $25,000 bond. Dang. Wow. That's some partnership, though, right? But, you know, when you're like, hey, I'm going to shoot you, and they go ahead. Okay, then do it. Don't even give him a second. All right, you picked. Third hour next.
The ayes are 249 and the nays are 181. The bill is passed.
So that was yesterday. I thought they were coming from the gas stoves. House Democrats said they're okay with banning gas stoves. That's what that was. That was one of the things happening in the House yesterday. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. But they, wait, I thought we were conspiracy theorists.
Yeah, yeah.
That's just a spoiler alert, really.
Remember when it used to take months, sometimes years, for these conspiracy theories to flush out? Now it's like weeks.
Yeah, or in a matter of days at some point. I mean, it's just, we're right there. Holy cow. All right, so that was yesterday with the House. The House was a little busy, a little bit busy. With that, they had the gas stove. They also voted to increase congressional authority over federal rulemaking. That was something I think that they had all. That was the RAINS Act. But the RAINS Act is going to be DOA in the Senate. The RAINS Act, this is one of the things championed by Thomas Massie. And it's the regulations from the Executive in Need of Security Act, RAINS Act. So that cleared the chamber. It was a party line vote, 221 to 210. Jared Golden of Maine, the one Democrat who broke away from party lines, he voted with Republicans on that. And it was, they 11 conservatives agreed to advance it and for their bills to the floor. So there was a lot of movement there as a result at the last minute. But the RAINS Act, that's the bill that mandates that the major rules that the federal agencies proposed have to be approved by Congress before they take effect. Now, you would think that that's how it's supposed to work anyway, right? Like if it's any kind of federal rule or regulation, according to the regulation, it says it has to have an annual effect on the economy of $100 million or more. It has to lead to a significant increase in cost and price for consumers, individuals, or government agencies, or geographic reasons, et cetera, et cetera. There's a whole bunch of other things. They would affect things like ATF and others, like CDC with the leasing. So that's not going to go anywhere in the Senate, but it's going to be, I don't want to say it's a symbolic vote, but I do think it shows that Democrats don't want to curtail, don't want to in any way have a rollback of a lot of these unconstitutional moves that these agencies have been making that they're supposed to be in the hands of Congress. So it's not good. I hate saying that because it's a great bill. It's not going to go anywhere. It's not going to go anywhere in the Senate. Not at all. And then they had, let me pull this up. There were 20 House Republicans that moved to block a resolution to censure Adam Schiff. Now, there was a lot of back and forth on this. And I think that there's some nuance here that I want to make sure. Because with this bill, let me pull this up. It was 225 to 196.7. And it called for censuring and condemning Schiff for conduct that misleads the American people in a way unbefitting elected member of the House of Representatives. And they would have an investigation. Anna Paulina Luna, I think, had proposed it. And they tabled the resolution. There were a couple of there were 20 Republicans that had voted on that as well. And Thomas Massie was one of them. There were some people that do not have the long record of devotion to limited government that Thomas Massie is, that were a little over their skis, I think, in going after Thomas Massie the way that they were. If Massie does something, he is to the letter of the law. And I think that I think there's only maybe two or three in the House. If I want to be honest with you, I don't count any more than three lawmakers in the House that are letter to the law like that. In fact, I'd put money on it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. I think Chip Roy is pretty letter to the law. I think Thomas Massie is pretty letter to the law. I think Van Dyne's pretty letter to the law. And I don't really have any more, if I'm being honest. Kane, would you disagree?
No.
I'm trying to think.
I'd have to think a minute or two. I could probably come up with a couple.
There's such a small number. I'm not saying that the others are bad. I'm just saying that When I mean their letter of the law people, I mean they will actually, they will follow the Constitution to the absolute letter, to the point where it is a disadvantage for them. And Thomas Massie does not care about making friends. He is one of the people there. I can count the number of lawmakers on one hand that I would actually defend. Legit. But I'll still call balls and strikes if they do something dumb. I don't care. I can still like you, and I can still be like, I don't like that part. But I like, you know what I mean? You can still do that. I hate this idea that if you're going to be, you know, in someone's camp or you're going to like someone, that you have to forfeit your right of criticism. Oh my gosh, I reject that so hard. I don't have enough middle fingers for that sentiment. But with Massie, so the, from what I understand, and we're trying to get Massie on the show. We've had him on the show, but it's we're on air, like literally when they've been on the floor. So it's been a little tough. But the resolution was going to fine him $16 million. Apparently that was part of it. And the measure, they said if he... he said that the problem that he had with it was the non-binding whereas clause in the measure that said Schiff would be fined $16 million if the ethics committee finds that he lied, made misrepresentations, or abused sensitive information. And that figure was what they, I think Luna had said, was like half the amount of money American taxpayers paid to fund the investigation. Now, look, I like Anna Paulina Luna. I endorsed her before in a race. I made a video to raise money for her ad buys. Yeah, I made it was the Red State Warriors video. So I like her. I just don't like this that she did. I just disagree with it. Doesn't mean I dislike her. I don't even agree with my husband on everything. But I like her. And that, so Massie was saying that he could not get behind it because he said that the fine was a constitutional violation. And this is how he explained it. I'll read his own words. He says, quote, Adam Schiff acted unethically. But if a resolution to fine him $16 million comes to the floor, I will vote to table it, meaning vote against it. He goes, in fact, I'm still litigating a federal lawsuit against Pelosi over a salary reduction she imposed on me for my refusal to wear a mask. He says the Constitution says, and it does, that the House may make its own rules, but we cannot violate the other later provisions of the Constitution. He says the $16 million fine is a violation of the 27th, he said, and the 8th Amendments. So he's like giving you the 8th Amendment is excessive bail or excessive fines imposed or cruel and unusual punishment. And the 27th Amendment is no law varying the compensation for the services of senators or representatives can take effect until an election has taken place. So it's basically like requiring an election before their before any kind of effect to salary. Does that make sense? So yeah, it does actually. You could argue it does. I understand his point. I think that he's correct. Would I have voted the same way? I don't know. I'm not a letter of the law. See? I just appreciate other people.
He made another point later on Twitter that said that, think about this. If the House can lay claim to a $16 million fine from one member, imagine what would happen if Democrats ever get the majority back.
Yeah. Now, the only thing... Now, here's where I'm of two minds. The only part where I part ways with Massie, I understand, and he's correct. He's not wrong. He is very constitutional, but remember what I said? He is constitutional to the point where he will disadvantage himself. But if you want someone who's straight, no chaser, constitution, and limited government, he is your guy unequivocally. And I think we need more of him. But then I also am of this mind. What did I tell you the other day about my criticism of Trump? Because I like Trump. Just because I disagree with you on some things doesn't mean, you know what I mean? Just like with Massie. Massie's one of the, on one hand, I would defend. When Trump had said, you know, lock her up, and that's what he campaigned on. And then afterwards, he's like, yeah, I'm not going to pursue it. He didn't want to hurt them anymore. And I thought even at the time, and I even remarked on air, I went back and I found a couple of my tweets. I'm like, oh my gosh, why is he doing this? No, go after. I retweeted the story at the time. What did I say about mercy in politics? Mercy in life is great. In politics, doesn't exist. So this is where I'm like, he's following the letter of the law. I get it. Do you think that Democrats would do the same thing? No. No, they wouldn't. Your answer is no. They wouldn't. That's why I'm like, I think I would have voted for it. If you're asking me what I honestly would have done. So this is one of the reasons why I don't think I should ever be in elected office, because I'd be like, hell yeah, I'd vote for that. It's not enough, Anna. Add more. You see? Because it doesn't make it. I know. I'm just saying hypothetically. I already can literally feel some of my other friends getting to the keyboards and going, wait a minute, Dana. But I understand what people are saying, that, well, if you then you're contributing to the degradation of law. I get that. That's why I'm almost torn. You see what I'm saying? So I think Massey was very honest and transparent. And I think some of the people going at him need to slow their damn rolls. I mean, this dude has taken more hits for limited government than almost any other person in the House. So there are people that are over their skis that do not have the record. In fact, they look moderate compared to him. So I think they need to slow their roll just a bit. All I'm saying. Would you have voted for it, Kane?
I don't know. Honestly, I would want to. Yes, I would totally want to.
I would have, but I'm not going
to
lie.
I wanted to 100% until I did see Thomas Massey's explanation of it, where I said, you know what? He has a really good point here. Let's clean it up. And apparently she's removing the fine part of that whole thing and resubmitting it. And Thomas Massey is committed to voting for.
Yeah. So she's doing they're working together. They're doing the right thing. That's how it should be. You know, just work your differences. Nobody needs to be going at each other publicly. What you do is you work your differences in the back, then you bring it out, and then you keep unity, and you still get to punch them. So, I don't know. Massey's completely correct. My answer of what I would do personally is not. But I still would do it. I'd be like, add more, Anna. Add more. That's me, though. See? Do you see? You know, this is why Democrats need to not do this kind of stuff. Because then you would get someone petty and vindictive like me. And I hold a grudge forever. And I would do this. We don't need that. We don't need that. We need more of the Massey stuff, right? Right, guys? Right? Yeah. Everyone out there in Radio Land's like, I don't know. Just saying.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So data from a NASA spacecraft have revealed that phosphorus is present on the subsurface ocean of Enceladus on the moon of Saturn. It has all the ingredients required for life, Kane. It's a salty ocean hidden under the icy shell of a tiny little moon orbiting Saturn. I don't know why I said it like that, but it's way more entertaining, isn't it? Let's see, there's a manhunt for a serial crocodile killer in Queensland after the second decapitation. Now, it's not crocodiles killing people, it's people killing crocodiles. So in Australia, they're investigating this serial croc killer. An anonymous caller claimed responsibility for two decapitated crocs found in the state's far north in the last 2 months. One of the local operators there, a local crocodile tour operator, got the call from this mystery person shortly after they discovered the decapitated head and spine of a 40-year-old female saltwater croc they had been observing for more than two decades. And the guy says, quote, "I'm the apex predator now. I killed a crocodile." That's literally what he said. Yeah, I'm not going to tell you about the other ones, but the saltwater crocs, they're like hunted to the edge of extinction in the 70s until conservation efforts helped them rebound. But they're still crazy. They're still crazy, but, you know, let's, you know, protect them from a distance, right? I'm just saying. Republicans beat Democrats for a third year in a row at the congressional baseball game. Did you go? Steve, did you end up going? Greg Stube took the mound. He was a starting pitcher. I forgot he broke his pelvis, like, just like, what, a few months ago? He fell on a ladder at his home. So he tossed four innings, gave up five runs. So they had a big win yesterday. A new bill would ban the government from flying in non-U.S. flags after the White House put the pride flag on full display. So it's a new GOP-introduced bill. The government can't fly flags other than the American flag. I don't even know why we don't have that. Right? Like, in Texas, the Texas flag is actually the only flag that can technically be raised at the same height of the American flag, and they had the Pride flag, like, the same height as the Texas flag outside the Gaylord Hotel, where TPUSA had their event. You know, the Gaylord Hotel, the Lord of the Gays? Just, yeah. And the U.S. once again sees record overdose deaths. Close the border. Stick with us. A ton more in store.
Whether you just want to stay informed or just hear her vent about all the ridiculousness in the world, make sure to download the Dana Show podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
And yet with all those problems, he has a real serious fixation on the state of Florida. I mean, I think it's just bizarre that he does that. But what I would tell him is, you know what? Stop pussyfooting around. Are you going to throw your hat in the ring and challenge Joe? Are you going to get in and do it? Or are you just going to sit on the sidelines and chirp? So why don't you throw your hat in the ring, and then we'll go ahead and talk about what's happening. So
it's true, because Gav just kind of sits there and goes on and on and on, and he gets to hide behind DeSantis and Biden and Trump and everybody else, and acts like he's not in the race when he's kind of... We were talking about this at the start of the show. Welcome back. Bottom of this third hour here. Dana Lash with you, your lovable curmudgeon. The weird thing is Gavin Newsom acts like he's still running, but he's officially not. Like, he's officially thrown his support behind Joe Biden, but doesn't really seem like he's really campaigning for Joe Biden, does it? Doesn't. So that, I loved that response. They're already selling shirts on that. DeSantis's people are. Now, Gavin Newsom is going to get even angrier, because apparently Texas Governor Greg Abbott dropped off the first busload of illegal entrants in Los Angeles. Oh, boy. You know, it's a sanctuary, right? I mean, just call it. If people say you're lying to people about where they're going, if you tell them it's a sanctuary city and they have all these sanctuary things, then, you know, I mean, sure, who wouldn't want to go there? They said that this would be a red state. Greg Abbott has sent some busloads to other sanctuary cities, D.C., New York, Chicago, Philly, Denver. And yesterday evening, the first busload was dropped off in downtown L.A. Can't wait for L.A. Mayor Karen Bass and Governor Gavin Newsom to respond to this. So they said that Abbott, you know, apparently the AP asked about it, and he said, well, you know, I mean, the city declared itself to be a sanctuary for people who were here illegally, and so they've extended protections to illegal immigrants to the extent of allowing them to provide for various state benefits. So we just thought, there you go. He said in his statement, quote, Texas's small border towns remain overwhelmed and overrun by the thousands of people crossing illegally into Texas from Mexico because of the administration's refusal to secure the border. He adds, our border communities are on the front lines of Biden's border crisis. Texas is going to continue providing this much needed relief until he steps up, does his job to secure the border. So they sent, and he tweeted it out. There you go. And that was done. He announced it yesterday evening at like 7. So Bass, the mayor of L.A., she said, quote, this did not catch us off guard, nor will it intimidate us. Los Angeles is not a city motivated by hate or fear, and we will not be swayed or moved by petty politicians playing with human lives. So I don't think that he meant to catch them off guard. I don't think he cared about any of that. I mean, they said that. Why should Texas have to pay for California's policies? If you vote for those policies in your state, then you can have those policies in your state. But you don't get to decide what to do with my tax dollars in my state. Not at all. They had Jorge Cabrera of the Coalition for Humane Immigrant Rights. He told the AP that they have not yet received asylum, because not everybody is an asylum seeker. So that's going to be interesting to see how that, and I hope they send more, because clearly they were advertising for it. Remember, they don't even extradite, right? They don't even work. They don't even cooperate with ICE. California doesn't even cooperate with ICE. So just send people there. That makes perfect sense. I'm sure that, you know, again, sanctuary, they would love it there, right? Sounds legit. Now, two other things. First off, the way that the media has been handling this insane story with Target. I'm sure you've seen some of this. Remember when, this was after the first beginning criticism of Target having these displays and the trans, you know, tucking suits and all of this stuff. So the Free Beacon has this piece. The Targets, they said one of them received bomb threats. And the way the media told the story, and this is by Drew Holden, is unforgivable. So they had Target stores across America evacuated last weekend. Bomb threats were coming in. Oh my gosh, bomb threats? What? Bomb threats were coming in. And the way that they wrote about it, they made it sound like it was a very dishonest framing. They made it sound like the bomb threats were coming from people who were criticizing the, you know, like the tux swimsuits and things like that, right? That's what it looked like. So they said that actually the bomb threats were coming from members of the Alphabet community who accused the store of, quote, betraying the Alphabet community and, quote, bowed to the wishes of far-right extremists who want to exterminate us. But the so you had a member of the Alphabet community making the bomb threats because they were mad that Target did not want to work, I guess, with the Alphabet community and have that stuff out anymore. So the Washington Post, USA Today, Holden Notes, and others buried or left out. They misrepresented the nature of the threats. They made it so they were all false alarms. They all mentioned conservatives, though, and the conservative backlash, et cetera, et cetera, when they were writing about this. The first mention of the fact that, you know, that Target was accused of betraying the Alphabet community came in like the eighth paragraph of one of these pieces. The Hill said Target stores in at least five states received bomb threats over Pride items. Well, they make it sound like conservatives were doing it. And in fact, it was this Alphabet activist. I mean, and law enforcement yet hasn't identified suspects. I mean, this is insane. So they had all of this. They were upset. And so they didn't tell the truth. They framed the story to make it look like it was an attack on Pride, whatever, instead of from the Alphabet community upset that Target had removed this. So it had Washington Post, USA Today, oh my gosh, who else? Newsweek, Target stores received bomb threats amid Pride backlash. Theirs is really bad. Vox, an atmosphere of violence. I mean, someone was mad that Target betrayed the community and by caving to protests, so they called in bomb threats. That's not how the media framed it at all, is it? Not at all. Absolute, just crazy. But that's how they presented it. Now, do you remember? I don't follow this. I don't follow Demi Lovato. I do not follow her because she seems like an exhausting person. Always with drama. New headline because she went. I guess she was trying to say she was trans, and so she wanted to use they, them pronouns. Well, now she announced to everyone she's using they, them pronouns. Now she announced to everyone she's back to using she, her pronouns because she said that using those the grammatically and scientifically incorrect pronouns, she says it was exhausting. She's exhausting. A year ago, she was non-binary, and she was like, I want to go by they, them. And she said, I was balanced in my masculine and feminine energy. And then she said she got tired of having to explain to people why she was using, you know, scientifically and grammatically incorrect things to as her pronouns. She said it was absolutely exhausting. I just got tired. For that very reason, I knew it was important to continue spreading the word. You mean she was tired of pretending? Is that what it is? Tired of pretending. I'm curious, did she ever use a men's bathroom? The men's bathroom? I wonder if she, because, you know, she identified as, you know, trans and she was non-binary and all this stuff and like fluid, gender. I'm wondering if she ever did that. I'm just curious. But she couldn't keep up the pretend. She was exhausted. She couldn't keep pretending. So she was exhausted. She was like, she said that she wished for more gender neutral spaces and she was torn over basic amenities like sex assigned bathrooms and paperwork. Oh my gosh, you have first world problems. Talk about bitching about nothing. Oh my gosh. We have social norms and all of that for a reason. It's to make society work. It's the reason we have it. I mean, I'm so tired of everybody acting like they got to walk on eggshells around people who are going to break down if their mayonnaise doesn't affirm the way that they have sex. Oh my gosh, I just, I'm so done with it. Every single thing. I mean, how many people are in the United States? Hundreds of millions, billions. There's a reason why we have social norms. There's a reason why, I mean, it's a bathroom. We're not talking about you're living the rest of your life in the space. This stuff is exhausting. It is exhausting. But the exhaustion, though, that's kind of the point. They want to, that the whole activist community that pushes this wants to wear you down. I have to wonder, like, was she really committed to it if she got that tired? It wasn't even a year. Right. I mean, was she, like, that? I mean, it didn't even last for a year, and she was already tired of it. Good heavens. That's just absolute madness. All right, I know, I got a whole bunch more. We have, in addition to this, I found, speaking of media, I thought this was hysterical. I don't have this listed as anything under my rundown, but I saw this pushed out there by, it's out in Boulder, Colorado. It's the Daily Camera. And they have a picture of all these, like, I guess there was like a boulder collapse on the road, right? And this is how they have it titled. Colorado 7 is closed between Allen Spark and Leon in North Boulder County due to lots of large boulders, the size of very large boulders in the road. Large boulders, the size of very large boulders in the road. Was the asteroid that was the size of 84 orcas the other day?
How many orcas is the boulder?
How many orcas is it? How big is it in orcas? That's what I want to know. How big is that? They said that they actually have to move all of this stuff, and they said, oh my gosh, boulder-sized boulders. It's a rock slide. Boulder-sized boulders. That's what they got.
To catch up on all the headlines and crazy wokery, download the Dana Show podcast and get Dana's perspective on the Dana Show.
You know, when they had at the White House, you know, this transgender flag as the precedence over the American flag, that's wrong. That is not how you display the American flag. And I think when you have the inappropriate conduct at the White House with like, you know, these transgender flashing people nude and all this stuff, you know, it's just totally inappropriate. And I think even the White House had to acknowledge it was inappropriate. But I would ask them, if it is inappropriate to do that, the White House, which I certainly think it is, why do you want to have that curriculum jammed into a second grader's classroom? That's what you're always talking about. Back there.
So that's that was a great point, I think, from Florida Governor Ron DeSantis just then. He was talking about, of course, that the Hunter Biden thing. It looks like he planned it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it looks like that he, yeah, that's what it looks like. That party that they did on the South Lawn where they had the flags up and all that whole, gosh, I'm so done with it. Just like not be trashy. But he made a good point there. Welcome back to the program. I was looking at this audio, and we'll play this tomorrow. We'll save this for tomorrow. But Dan Goldman, who was saying that the head of Burisma said that nobody from Burisma ever had contact with the Bidens, ever. Nobody did. Nobody did. He was like, he never had contact with MVP Biden. He like went on and on, and we're going to play that tomorrow. But I have to, the email came out. There's always a receipt. And it's literally from the Burisma executive who is verbatim thanking Hunter, and this was on April 17th of 2015, for arranging a meeting with his dad, Joe Biden, who was then vice president.
Oops.
So I'm made of questions right now. Why in the world is he just clueless? Does he think that maybe he's not in on the grift? That's what it is. He's not in on the grift. That's what it is. I don't know. I can't wait. So we're going to talk about that tomorrow. We're going to get into all of that because there's a lot there. Now, because I want to make sure there's some things that we weren't able to get into today, including how apparently the 90s grunge aesthetic is back. Why? Except it's even more annoying now than it was when we were teenagers. So when the grunge aesthetic was popular, I was a teenager and you like wore your dad's flannels. I wore my stepdad's flannels. I shopped in his closet. I wore his, and he was like, why are you wearing my good work flannels? You know, because he worked in a factory. He's like, why are you wearing my good work flannels? Like, it's not my fault that you're just stylistically trendy right now. It's not my problem. But now have you seen some of this stuff? So like it's back, but you can get the same kind of flannels that you can probably get out of your granddad's closet. Now they're like at Nordstrom. Here, come and purchase our $125 flannel.
Is that the pipeline?
Huh?
Oh, Nordstrom. Never mind.
Oh, you thought I was talking. Oh, that's KJP, what she thinks it is. The Nordstrom pipeline, as opposed to the Nord Stream. Which, you know, sidebar, I wouldn't be opposed to having like a Nordstrom pipeline. I wouldn't be opposed to having like a retail pipeline from certain parts of Europe because there's certain things over there that they just, you know, it's like 20% cheaper over there than it is here in the United States because of where the manufacturing is, et cetera, et cetera. I could talk about that for quite some time. We're going to get into all that tomorrow. Tomorrow's Friday. So we've made it through the week. We'll finish it together. Today in Stupidity, Kane.
All right. And Juan, this is cut too, so you can actually play this for the television audience as well. It's our President Biden who's talking about building a railroad from the Pacific Ocean all the way across the Indian Ocean. Listen to this.
Well, we're going to win and we're going to help. We have plans to build a railroad from the Pacific all the way across the Indian Ocean. What? We have plans to build in Angola, one of the largest solar plants in the world.
Map of the world,
I could go on, but I'm not. I'm going off.
You're familiar where Pacific Ocean and Indian Ocean are?
I don't know how he's going to do that.
I don't know where the railroad's going to go, though.
It's in the air, Kane.
Oh, I thought it was in the water.
It's held up by those balloons.
I was confused.
Maybe it'll just go into the water. They'll just drive it, plunge it right into the damn sea. Who knows? It's Joe Biden. Folks, that does it for us today. Have a great night. I'll be back on air with you tomorrow.